The following program may contain content that your kids would love to hear, but you may not want them to.
Have you ever tried to buckle a monkey into a spaceship? It's not easy with all those bananas. You're listening to Frank Cotolo on Cotolo Chronicles. I'm the Artist D from the Artist D's fabulous show on 4Culture Radio. Keep listening to Frank right now and download us all at juicedtalk.com after the show.
Scusi, Babbitt a Boopy.
Look out, because here it comes. I thought I saw it coming. I just had this ringing in my ears that said, here it comes. I know I hear it. I know it's on the way. Here it comes, and I'm telling you, in this event, in that event, and in all events, certainly in this event, what is it? I think it's this way. In that case, in this case, and in every case, coming up. Probably one of the more serious things I ever did in my life. Without my pants. So come on! Everyone! You will be there, and we will be there with you when you are there. What is it?
Cotolo Chronicles.
The rules don't apply to me.
That's Cotolo over there. You know what I mean?
That's, yeah, see what happens there? Godfather of Internet Talk Radio. There's a badge. Who can wear that badge but me, the Bard of Broadcasting, the most fascinating man on the Internet? That's debatable. Here, the third man. I am here. I'm the man whose name adorns the title of the show, Cotolo, he who chronicles. They're listening all over the world, live and lifelike, right here on this transfer of zeros and ones. Stay with us. Who's with us? Charles Dennis and more. Neil's here. And me, who is that over here?
That's Cotolo over there, you know what I mean?
From Ice Cap to Ice Cap, from Hamlet to City, from Othello and into every bordello, it is I. Yes, they're still listening in Cuba. As I mentioned a couple of weeks ago, I hear that they're gathering on the beach in groups of people who know each other and don't know each other. Do people know one another? You know, it's odd. Once again, these odd coincidences, these crossing swords. No, not cross, these signals. These signals that cross one another in my life are amazing, because only a couple of weeks ago, we go on to, you know, one of the countries, not another country. They can get us in Cuba. You know, it's not like it's a big deal because they, from the beginning, they could get us in a cave in Afghanistan, okay? But they got us in Cuba because it's difficult. And there wasn't even allowed to be a signal or what have you. And, but why Cuba? Cuba, Cuba. And then suddenly I'm watching advanced episodes of The Detour, which is a, it's just a fascinating and spectacular piece of work by Samantha Bee and Jason Jones. If you haven't seen it, I think TBS produces it. I don't know, whatever, but it's on, you know, it's on demand. One of the rare things I've left on my cable TV because I'm, okay. And I'm, they have advanced episodes, so you don't have to wait every Tuesday and see it or whatever, what have you. So, and then they wind up in Cuba. And it's amazing. And I'm watching and I'm going, look at this. Isn't this amazing? Here I am for the third week saying Cuba, and I have no, or Cuba as they try to say it. I had this, these connections, these crossed wires that are just amazing. Also, and it connects with what we're going to do on this show. Mr. Charles Dennis is going to be here to talk about At Will at Large, which is the second installment, the At Will at Large, the series with Neil Dixon. And Neil Dixon is going to be here. Except I don't know how. I haven't totally figured that out. Unless he's going to be with Charles and Charles is going to be here somehow or other, that's going to work out. And, we're going to talk about all that stuff and the new web series, which is really going over well so far. Hundreds of listeners, didn't they call them listeners? Well, they are listeners. They're watchers and listeners because it's on YouTube. Foo Dog Productions and my friend Charles Dennis, who, and that's another strange thing too, because I was watching that when Charles got in touch with me and said, hey, why don't we do a show? And I went, I'm just watching this darn thing. And there you are on the darn thing. So, you know, life has these, particularly with me, for some reason or another. Me? Who me? Frank Cotolo, the man's name adorns the title of the show that we have here on forever and ever and ever. It seems like forever, doesn't it? No, it doesn't. It's gone by so darn quickly. Listening in Cuba? Okay, I told you that. You know all about that other stuff going on. And what's going on? Oh, next time. You know, I think Kurt Brando will be here next week. I don't have that big calendar anymore. Because if I did have that big calendar sitting here, it would be worthless because it was 2016. And you know, Y2K plus 17. If I just count 7 days from now, and that will be, you know who? Mr. Kurt Brando. I think, from what he said, if things go right, he will be in the Philippines. When he first got on this show, he was in, well, he was in Louisiana, where he lives there. But he was just on vacation. He had moved from Seattle. Originally, when we met him, he was in Seattle at a newspaper. And then he went to the Arab Emirates, United Arab Emirates. He went over there. And then that was it for a while. He brought us Twitter before anybody knew there was a Twitter and told us. And boy, did he turn out to be telling us more than almost anything that anybody ever said about that. What else is going on? I want to remind you that soon, you know, we're also heard during the week, not live, but lifelike, at True Talk Radio twice a day during weekdays. And they're down for a while. I think they'll be back next week. But they're also handling my weekly humorous satiricalist, my satire political pulp has come back after many months of year. Maybe it was almost over a year. I don't know when it was on there. I'm going to tell you all these places you could go, aside from just going to YouTube, to At Will at Large, and Charles Dennis. You can go there. Yeah, you know, it's amazing. Sometimes I'm doing this, and I'm going, come on. They know this, who they might be, okay? But what about those packs of people on the sands of the beaches of Cuba? They don't know. Wait a second. I better know English, otherwise I'm going to have a translator here. And if I do, you can bet it will be someone I know and like. I don't share this mic with anyone. And when they lose a favor of me, what do? They leave. So what the heck? My name is Frank Cotolo. Man's name adorns the title of the show. I say that about bring up Montreal Jewish news again. because it's a popular column, but also because it has on the bottom of it, see, I don't have to write, tell you all the deals with the books, okay? But down there, you know, all these links to getting the books, my books, the books that are out. And you can't get the books that aren't out. Well, yeah, some people can. So you can get them and link there to get the books. Right? So there, Montreal Jewish News. And it's a very, very productive source for selling my books. So I can only say that thank you to all the people in Canada. And of course, Canada has been so good to me through the years that it's amazing. And that's another one of those wires that crosses. Because I was, when I was younger, I was writing songs about Canada long before they even told me, you know, if you're not going to go fight in Vietnam, you're going to have to go to Canada. And a long story, and we don't want to hear about it. So what I'm saying is we're going to talk about tonight, At Will at Large, a series in progress. Okay, so if you don't waste your time. Uh-oh, I'm not going to get too editorial about, you know, where not to go. I want to promote the things that we do here, the things that I do. Charles Dennis, go to Amazon and look up Charles Dennis. He has a number of books there too. Books, you can buy so many books now because of your smartphone, your smart Kindle, your Kindle. Kindle is the, I don't know, however that is, a PDFs, whatever it is. You know, people are reading on e-devices. And you could buy so many books in the past. If I told you, hey, listen, we know of a couple of people, including, of course, Stacey Lane Wilson, who's going to be on again. Her book, So L.A., she'll be on again, and we're going to get, going to try to get Heather Drain on with her. And so if I told you in the old days, look, here's a couple of books you should read. So L.A., the novels of Charles Dennis, okay, and my books, and you can get all those. If I would have told you go out there, I would have said, this is going to be a month's rent, but it'll be worth it, okay? It's not anymore. You could buy an entire library worth of material for e-devices for nothing. I don't mean nothing. It's free. I mean that it's not, that's for nothing. Have you had a book that would cost you, you know, you just look at the, here's what you do. If you go to blurb.com where my Molotov memoirs books appear for sale, look at the price of the hard copy and then look at the price. Look at the difference in that and the digital. Okay. And I'm not saying you're cheap. I'm not saying that, but everybody's cheap at heart. Okay. And it's like, yes, I might as well get it for my book. And you know what? The people who aren't cheap say, I'm going to get a digital, even, you know, they might buy both, but they got to get a digital copy of this particular book because my phone's always with me. I know your eyes are always with you, but you don't carry books around. People don't carry books around anymore. They carry phones, iPhones. I don't even call it a phone is ridiculous because phoning, the act of phoning on an iPhone, on a smartphone, on an Android, on an iPhone, whatever the heck it is, the phoning, using it as a phone, I think may be the least of the functions you use. In other words, in order, right? Number one would be, you know, internet or whatever. And then you plug in your own music. You listen to your own music. Sometimes from a streaming service, sometimes from YouTube, whatever. I mean, you program your own thing, right? I mean, by the time you get the phone and you text, when you text more than you phone, I'll bet you dollars to donuts. You buy the donuts. So get the books. It's so inexpensive to get yourself a library of books that you can have and read and enjoy. So do it. My name is Frank Cotolo. Man whose name is on the title of the show. Also, look at entertainment. We're going to talk tonight with the star of At Will at Large, Neil Dixon, and Mr. Charles Dennis, who wrote, directed it, and some other people who were fabulous in it, including Ross Benjamin, son of Dick Benjamin, who both have been on the show in the past and have been very attentive to this medium early on, too. I mean, before, people were really shaken to get on to shows like this and onto the interweb, you know. That's another thing. Someone said interweb this week, and I hadn't heard anybody say interweb, and then suddenly someone said interweb, and I've been saying interweb for years. And all I'm doing when I do that, I don't want to pat myself on the back, so I don't really give a rolling a donut, okay, for that credit. I tell you that because it's another piece of promotional material that makes you go, hey, you know, I'll listen to this show because I'll hear things here first. I'll hear things about things that affect me in my life here first. And you do. And a lot of people still don't come here to hear this stuff. They go, you know, every night to Stephen Colbert and Jimmy Fallon and the whole, that whole crew of late night people. Yeah, and what do people do? Do people sit there and go, oh, you know what? Maybe they record everything. I mean, who wants to watch five monologues? You know, and then you could watch the old Johnny Carson monologues, which you should watch on that, was that Ant TV? Because that's the root of all that comedic evil. All of this stuff going on. Oh, it's unbelievable. But entertainment? You still have to go to the movies. I literally went to the movies and brought someone to the movies a couple of weeks ago. And this cost, and look, cause now I get a discount. I get a senior discount. Okay. And the person who was with me, they just gave, they said, hey, yeah, give us a senior discount. Right. So, you know, they're like, yeah, really good. And, you know, cause I couldn't possibly be with anybody who doesn't have, it doesn't matter what they look like. I can't be with anybody who doesn't do it. Right. It's like, did I make a big stink? No, I made no stink whatsoever. I just said, thank you, took it and went. But the point is, what that cost to see one, two people to see one movie, and yet four people could sit in front of a one of these large screens, and we all have large screens now, don't we? If we have computers at home, or we have the flat deck HD screens for our TVs, or hooked up to internets and stuff like that, you can watch Charles Dennis episodes, and don't cost you anything. You know, it may cost you if you want to invite people over, and you're going to buy the beer or the wine or the soda or the hard lemonade or hard soda or hard wine or white wine or red. What if you're going to do that and then popcorn, then that's your expense, period. Hey, not even talk about what it costs to buy anything. Listen to this. Two cups of coffee to watch this movie after even with the senior discounts, two senior discounts and then two coffees. You know, we're talking about, well over $20. And that's a cheap date in terms of movies. Cause some movies, I think, what does it cost? $10, $11 to get into a movie? Cause, well, they didn't go to, you know, they have 3D and then they have no 3D. They call it, what do they call it? General. The general screening and then the 3D screening. If you go to the 3D screening, it's going to be another $5 or $6 or $8 cause you got to rent the glasses. And I don't know about you, but I'd still rather watch, well, you might not know this, but when 3D originated, and I've talked about this on the show before, why do I say that if you haven't heard it before? It doesn't mean they're in, and I just say it again. The old 3D, the 3D that we used to get in comic books when 3D first came out and became popular, and the 3D in the movies, where there were not just horror movies like The Creature of the Black Lagoon, but you could see Dial M for Murder by Alfred Hitchcock and various other 3D produced films. I'm saying that because I, you know, 3D generated or whatever. You couldn't watch those without the glasses or you'd get nearsighted. And maybe that's too bad people got that way from television, but that's another story altogether. Point is, I would rather watch that than watch the new stuff. Oh, you know, it's fantastic for like, I don't know, 5 or 6 or 7 minutes. And then you literally forget. I don't say you. I don't know what you do. I don't know your experience. There might be people out there who say, you know, I only watch 3D and I love it. And you don't know the old 3D where it was different. It's still 3D. How could 3D be different? What was that, 2.5D? No, 3D was different in those days. And that's a little slicker. It's a little, you know, technology is better in all sorts of ways. And I'm not trying to be an old fogey who even though I get senior prices at the movies, I'm just telling you, I would rather watch that than this. All right. And I watched in general. I watched the general movie. Not because I'm cheap and it's less, but because it's just not that much better for the extra money that you pay to get the glasses. And they don't let you keep, you know why they don't let you keep the glasses? Because they can't charge you again the next time you go see a 3D movie. It's rigged. What isn't rigged? I ask you. In the true sense of the rig. The rig. What is the rig? life is rigged, right? Because it's guaranteed when you're born that you're going to go, it's not guaranteed you're going to go X amount of time. You could die at any time. And then eventually, no matter how well you stay and how old you get, you die again. Don Rickles died today as I'm speaking. No, he didn't die as I'm speaking. He died. He was 90, and he'll show up on the Bone Garden at the end of the year. Every year they say the same thing. They go, oh, it's going to be a big year on the Bone Garden when you start talking about all the people that passed away, because my gosh, there were so many. There are always so many. Always so many. It's not like this, you know. In any event, in all events, and certainly in this event, my name is Frank Cotolo, a man whose name adorns the title of the show. One little thing also, I am getting last week when Seven Graylins was on and we talked about how to get more out of Reddit. I listened to him. He was the best instruction book I could ever listen to. And I'm moving along slowly, trying to get the karma, they call it, and the points or whatever it is to start a subreddit. And when I start a subreddit, we're going to get in there and we're going to go crazy. I think we should go crazy and do a subreddit of Cotolo Chronicles, not just for promotion. You could bring your books if you do books. If you want to do books, ideas for books, you could bring bad comments, good comments, anything you want. This American Social News aggregation is, by the way, the fifth largest. Why are you doing an ad for Reddit? Everybody knows Reddit. I make it sound like it's new. I got to tell you, Twitter, when Kurt Brando brought Twitter to the table here at this broadcast, and not many people knew about Twitter, but by the time I got to Reddit, everybody knew about Reddit. And this is still a perplexing, complicated, busy and confusing site filled with links and pictures and stares of comments and various things. But I'm going to get through it with a 234 million unique users. I'm going to get in there. Little by little, I just have to keep posting comments. And you know what I found out this week? And he hadn't told me this. And that is, if you make a comment and then you move on to some other topic or what have you, and I don't know the exact amount of time, but in Reddit, if you make a comment, you can't make another comment for another, I don't know, 5 minutes or so. I'm still learning, still understanding. I'm dealing with the manual as we go along. I will talk to Seven again and maybe he can help me or what have you. But you might know. If you know more about Reddit, want to get in touch with me for that or any other reason, fcotolo@yahoo.com. Write to me there. Tell me what you know about Reddit and how we can get in there. Maybe you have the karma and the points to start the Cotolo Chronicles subreddit, and we could do it through you, and then join up, subscribe to that subreddit, because you could subscribe to subreddits. That's how you get in, when you sign in and you log in and whatever is going on with that place. And be part of, just get, you know what we want to do is we're putting more garbage onto the heap. That's what we're doing, because it's a heap. There's heaps of garbage. 234 unique million unique viewers. We got, oh my goodness, participants, not even just, Oh boy. So, Reddit, know about it, do it, whatever. I'm keeping you up to date with what's happening. I'm not giving it up. And the coming attractions, as I said, Kurt Brando and then Stacey Lane Wilson. Lots of guests, a stream of guests. Then we'll do one or two shows by ourselves. And we'll play Search Roulette and we'll do some other stuff that we were going to do eventually, I think. Well, I think that might be it. Hello, Cuba! Hola, Cuba! Should find like Cuban music and welcome them with aplomb. Okay? All right, wake up, everyone. It is night. It is time to get cracking. I want you to get your beverages. What a pause, huh? To find the word beverage, so you can replenish your precious bodily fluids as you go along. Have my coffee only because I guess there's a quarter cup left and sitting over on the side. It's cold, I bet. Why does it get so cold down here at this time? Because it's been a rainy, cool day, a cool spring day. If I have anything else to tell you, I'll tell you about it later. And we'll do other stuff. I want to get going because Charles is waiting, I'm sure, online. and we'll get Neil from there. I hope Neil is with him because I didn't get a request from Neil. We won't be stopped. So go get, you got your stuff now? You heard me quacking about this, that, and the other thing. You got your beverage? Sit down. Relax. And let's get Charles Dennis on the telephone. I love Charles. Boy, wait till you hear. If you haven't heard Charles on the show before, you'll love. Charles has a great voice. That's how I learned about Michael Laskin.
Frank?
Yeah, I wound up, hey, you have, I don't have a camera. Oh, do I have a camera? No, I don't have a camera here. Is that okay if I look at you? Oh,
video's turned off, so let me turn it on.
No, because I literally do not have a camera on this particular computer.
Oh, well, forget it. We can still talk.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. You don't mind, I can look at you.
You fine, look at me, and we have Clive Atwell himself.
Clive is here?
Mr. Neil Dixon is here as your special guest star.
And I was telling everyone that. I said, you know, I didn't get a request, so I wonder if he was going to be sitting there with you. And I'm glad that I could see him because he's one of those handsome blokes that that you see.
You're so sweet. You're so sweet. Listen, the moment Charles told me it would be Don Imus, I was just here in a flash.
You don't even want to hear my Don Imus story, so let's just move on. There's a reason. Although, you know, you got to hand it to the guy. He's still cracking. How old is Don now?
Cantankerous old bugger.
Oh, he's got to be a hot.
Gotta be 80.
Anyway,
something. Clive, thank you.
We're sitting here with our glasses of Pinot Grigio.
Yeah.
And happy to talk to you as always, Frank.
And of course, all I want to talk about is you,
me,
and Wolfman Fact.
Oh, you know, you're one of those guys with accents who know Wolfman. You know, we spent some time over there in the great empire.
You did? What were you doing there? Were you arrested?
It's a long story. What?
Beatles orientated, around the Beatles, wasn't it? I mean, weren't you guys the first people who really got onto the Beatles?
Sure.
Yeah?
Sure, that was us. No, we weren't.
What about Murray the K?
We are Murray. Murray was, yeah, as far as New York is concerned, maybe Murray.
What?
Mr. Kaufman, you know, his son was on our show a while back. Little Murray.
Really?
Yeah, Little Murray.
Neil does not.
I do know Murray.
Really?
Of course I know who
but
Murray
you weren't
the
here
K.
then. You weren't.
No, I was born. No, I do know who Murray the K is. I mean, listen, you know, these guys, you know, we're talking to now and, you know, Murray the K, but Wolfman Jack and you were his sidekick. Spread the word on the Beatles. I mean,
we did lots of things.
Broke in America.
We spread the word on many. Many people, but you know, we were over there because we went over there to start, a show. I'm not going to tell this whole story right now, but you know, the pirate radio deal, right? You know all about pirate radio.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, we were going to bring it back. Okay. And this is a great adventure. You know, there was a movie, I don't remember. It was a couple of years ago, the pirate radio movie.
It's Philip Seymour Hoffman.
Yeah. I don't know what that had to do with other than the fact that there was a boat and it was going to be a new boat and we were supposed to go out there. And it's a very, it's speaking of intrigue, it was totally, clandestine because, you know, it wasn't allowed. And we were going out there to, start the boat up again and go out onto the North Sea and do stuff. But that's a long story in itself. So we spent some time out there.
Wow.
Over in the motherland.
And of course, you know, out of that pirate radio came some of the great DJs. I mean, British DJs. You know, there was a guy out there called Johnny Walker.
That's who we were dealing with. I was just going to say, you must know Johnny Walker because he was.
I can hear his jingo now, Johnny Walker. You know, that was the kind of jingo thing. And he had a spot every night about 11 o'clock. And I was away I was sent off to a boarding school and, you know, I'd listen under the pillow to my little transistor radio at night and, listening to Radio Caroline, Radio London, all of those and pirate radios. And Johnny Walker had a spot at 11 o'clock every night where he played, it was for lovers and, you know, for you know, couples, yeah, whoever, yeah, was listening. And it was every night, 11 o'clock, and it was the Percy Sledge song.
When a man loves a woman. Yeah.
Was it Percy Sledge? Oh. It was Percy Sledge, I think.
Yeah.
When a man loves a woman. Oh. And it was just the most romantic thing.
And but, there you were in boarding school.
Yeah, right? I was boarding. And what could I do?
Well, we know what you could do.
But Johnny Walker then came out to America after the pirate radio. He went on Radio 1, I think, got sacked, came out to America and was a DJ down in San Diego, I think.
Really?
And then came back to the BBC. But great era, great era.
He was back at the BBC by the time we went over there, and he was getting involved with this. I forgot the name of the guy who had the boat, the rich guy who was going to do it.
I'll figure
it some way. I don't want to go into that, though. We're going to talk about other stuff. But, yes, that's us. We were over there, and I remember tons of things. I've told some parts about some stories about my trip over there. And then I was there another time. I was actually living out there and up there. Up. What the hell was the name of that? Harrogate.
Harrogate. My very first job in theatre was in Harrogate.
Ah, Harrogate, yes.
The Roman baths.
Yes, yes. Harrogate and the mud baths and Thirsk racetrack and the whole.
Yes,
So spent time up there. And but I forget the name of the guy. Well, you know, I go through that story again sometime. But Johnny Walker was hanging out with us because he was involved in that, and so was David Bowie's first drummer. I forget his name. He was a wonderful guy, a bunch of guys, and we had a lot of fun over there. That's and it never happened again, Clive. It never happened because of many reasons. But you know, we were renegades. We were it was all clandestine. We could, if the government knew, they could toss us, I guess, in the brink. What do you call it again? What do you guys call it again?
The brink is a naval term. I think it's kind of a generalized.
Yeah, that's not...
In the ocean? I mean, the...
in the ocean. Anyway, it doesn't matter. I remember someone telling me, because, you know, we do all this, did all this humor. We got into trouble a number of times doing humor. One of them was in Japan, where we did humor. We got into trouble. Because of our American sense of humor. But when I went over there, these guys like Johnny Walker and those guys were taking me around there going, now look, you know, we like Wolfman, we love all the stuff you do and everything, but, there are, you know, there's stuff they're not going to understand here. But I remember this one thing they told me. They said, you must remember, America and England are two countries separated by the same language.
Yeah, divided by a common language.
There it is.
I think actually it might have been Oscar Wilde.
Who said that originally?
Came out originally. Or, sure, I think it was Oscar Wilde. It was an Oscar Wilde-ism, I think, yeah. Two nations divided by a common language.
By a common language, yeah. That sounds more English. Well, you're here on Cthulhu Chronicles, and Neil Dixon is here with Charles Dennis, and he is terrific. I've seen the two episodes, and it was really odd because I found out they were there, and then it was as if Charles had something in his head, and then he got in touch with me, and I was going to get in touch with him and say, hey, we gotta get together, and certainly if you could get Neil, it would be great, and so
you
I sold
this. Hard it is to get Neil. First of all, let me tell you, Frank, he's leaving at 10 o'clock your time because he's busy, but so this is Neil's half hour.
I understand that. I mean, I would understand that because he's, but I just wanted to, comment on one thing. I love your expressions. And I think that, you know, the great thing about, that you don't get into theater when you get in film and TV, you know, you get the close sense. You don't really see expressions the way you do. I don't think people bring binoculars to theaters anymore. Do they? Do they bring ice cream? No. But certainly, I love your expressions. I watched this a couple of times just to see your, you know, reactions, and they really say what, and being a writer, Charles knows this too, you know, the things you just can't find the words that match what you're saying. It's like great stuff. Great stuff.
Thank you. Thank you, man. Cheers.
Well, I've felt that the show is John Le Carre meets Raymond Chandler meets the Coen brothers. You know, it's just, Alice in Wonderland. It's Clive Atwell, this man who tried to walk away from his past life and thought Southern California foolishly would be a safe place for him. And of course, his daughter was abducted and he went to pieces. And then he's befriended by this guy, Nelson Chadwick, who runs a Vendome liquor store, Studio City. And as our new CFO, Miss Vingsbo, described their show, it's sort of a British Ray Donovan.
Yes. Yes.
Before Ray Donovan.
Before, yeah. By the way, I know of Ray Donovan. I don't think I've ever seen one episode, but the other thing about Neil is that I showed some people. I said, "Look, you got this. Who's going to be on this week or what have you?" Somebody walking through my house, and you know, they introduced themselves and, "Hey, what are you doing walking through my house?" And they said, "Well, I don't know." And I said, "You got to watch this." And you know, you have. I know you've done other things, and I've seen you around here and there. But people who know nothing at all about anybody. They all said the same thing when they saw Neil. They went, "I know that guy. Where have I seen that guy?" Do you get that a lot?
I do. And it's funny, you know, I mean, it's one of those tired old faces that I have that's been around the block a few times. But I think generally, I mean, I was doing stuff in America. Well, not, I didn't live here, but back in the 80s, you know, early 80s, big mini series and things. And, I've done series of my own and stuff before on for Universal and stuff. And I think it's one of those things that people see the face. They might not know the name, but they know they've seen you. You know, it's just one of those weird things. But I do get a lot of that. Yeah, people say, "I know that.
Yeah, that guy." I don't know if that's the same way in Britain, is it? Do you get that?
Yeah, in Britain, I did. Very very much that. I mean, I did a big movie. Oh my God, it's dating me here, but you know, I did. Something back in the 80s, a big British movie about that called Biggles, B-I-G-G-L-E-S.
Right, Biggles, right.
And he was a pilot, first of all, a pilot. Somebody wrote 96 books about him. W.E. Johns wrote these books, and they eventually made a film, and I think back in the...
Frank, you understand, Biggles was, like, big on the radio. Various people played Biggles. It was big in Australia and everything. But this was the first time that anyone had actually seen Biggles. This was a big deal. Well, and did you have a command performance?
We had a Royal Command performance with Charles and Diana, and had the pleasure of sitting next to both of them for the entire evening. But you know, I think originally,
could you have done any more counselling? Do you think things
was
would have been better?
Was it pleasure? Was it pleasure?
She was, you know, I had to sit next to her.
Had to.
Yeah. And the leading lady in the film, a fabulous actress called Fiona Hutchinson, who lives in New York, had to sit next to Charles, and we had to converse all evening. And then the film started. And then, you know, afterwards they made a hasty exit because it was quite bad. But it was a lovely, you know, experience sitting with her. And then, you know, as history divulged, it was one of those things you think, wow, you know.
Is this the John Gielgud? What was the John Gielgud director?
It was a play I did in the West End with Judy Dench and Daniel Massey back in the 70s, actually. Early. Very early on in my career. And...
He had to get permission from his mother to do the play.
And Gielgud directed, and it was, in fact, the last thing that he ever directed.
And how was it being directed by Sir John?
Well, you know, it was kind of, you just had to get used to seeing him in the room, and he was dismissive of my first entrance in the first rehearsal that I did. He described me as a character probably not a lot of people in America know, but a Gracie Fields. He said, "Don't be so Gracie Fields." Well, Gracie Fields, well, Charles knows
he's
all
a
about
musical
Gracie.
Comedy star.
Yeah,
so.
A female. But he, you know, that was fun. But Biggles was a, you know, weird thing, but it did launch me. I mean, they did, I think, originally want Dudley Moore, to be honest, when they first started thinking about it. Then Jeremy Irons, and then they went really low budget, and I entered the picture. And but it was, you know, what it did was launch a lot of other things, you know.
Was this before AD or?
After AD, but so before AD was released. Right. It was kind of...
But
well,
when Neil did
when
the play in the West End with Judy Dench, a guy from NBC saw him, and they were doing this huge, huge miniseries in North Africa. And Neil played the lead.
I've got to say that Biggles was huge in Sweden.
Was it?
Yes.
Really?
I mean, you know, your new company director.
From his
director,
our CFO? They flew me as a child.
Well, they flew me to Sweden and made me an honorary member of the Swedish Air Force.
Yeah, I know.
I mean, I never got a discount on a Swedish airline.
Did you get wings?
What?
Did you get wings? What did they give you?
They did give me some wings. Yes, they did. They gave me a little medal.
See?
For now an honorary member.
See?
And I said, does that get me a cheap seat on a Swedish airline?
They said, no. How long were you there?
I was there for 3 days in staying at the hotel in the middle of Stockholm, that wonderful hotel, the Grand Hotel. And, you know, they took me to Cafe Opera.
Is that your coach? Who are you talking to? Your coach?
Over there,
we're
too.
Talking to Miss Vinsbo. I feel like this is the Howard Stern show.
Yeah.
And we have this.
No, don't say that.
No.
Don't say that.
Market from that,
yes,
believe
yes.
me. But no, it was just kind of it was an interesting time. But all roads lead to Charles Dennis.
We know. So, well, you're in the what the first at will? This is the second at will, right?
Yeah, but what about the season before?
Yeah, what happened
Charles
was.
Can explain.
I bought my first iPad in 2011, and I realized, oh, my God, it looks like movies.
Right.
And I made a sizzle reel for a kid's show that never went anywhere. And then the same year, I wrote the script for Neil. Neil was a gift to me almost 30 years ago from Ian McShane. And I will be grateful to him. And we had done a short film the year before that called The Favor of Your Company.
Mm.
And I love working with Neil. And so I wrote this short film, this little microcosmic story about a former assassin who changed his life and came to California.
Are you keeping the desk together and hammering it or something? What is it? What was that?
What?
It's a fan.
It's a fan. I can turn
That's
this
a fan. I just keep hearing this.
I don't want you to get weird.
Or it's either that or somebody shagging in the next room.
It was a metronome. I thought you need a metronome to speak.
Well, stop. Anyhow.
Keep your timing.
We made this short film, and Brent Huff, who's a wonderful actor and a great filmmaker on his own, played the mysterious Mr. Cobalt, who tried to get Atwill to come out of retirement and kill somebody. And when he doesn't cooperate, they kidnap his child. And we showed it at the Buffalo International Film Festival, and it won the Samuel Fuller Guerrilla Filmmaker Award, which I was thrilled about. And on the strength of that, we did a whole feature-length film called Chicanery,
right,
which
so
is
that's
being shown at the Riverside International Film Festival at the end of the month. And but then Neil was saying he missed Atwill, so we started to do more episodes. This season, which is season two, we rebranded it, and it's now listed as a television series on IMDb.
I saw that,
Basically, you got to understand, that very first episode, the short film, which became episode one, it's taken 6 years to get 1,600 views.
Yeah.
Episode two in 1 week is now up to 954. We'll be at 1,000. The word is getting out, and people are watching this.
And it's not because they're making mistakes by searching for Lionel Atwill.
No.
And running.
Poor Lionel Atwill is really sunk. He is sunk out of sight now. When you just put in Atwill, boing, up comes our poster for the new show.
Right.
And our dream, obviously, is to move this to Netflix or Hulu or somebody,
mm-hmm.
and start shooting episode three as soon as Neil is done with, you know, Neil does a lot of books on tape. He's very, very big on
this. Could understand that, yeah. Do they do a lot of editing, Neil?
In England? They do a lot there.
Because as well as anyone reads, let's face it, you do a lot of takes and you still screw up, right?
Oh, yeah. I mean, the weird thing is, doing those books here, I mean, you know, going back to what you said earlier about, you know, one nation divided by a common language or two nations divided by a common language. Right. I mean, there's so many words that we have, that I've got used to saying in England that you say differently here. You know, the obviously, you know, aluminum, aluminium and blah, blah, blah. I mean, a lot of what happens, these books, mostly when they come up, the worst possible way is that you get a call and they want you to start reading it 2 days later. Well, you know, it's impossible to, for me personally, to read and prep a complete book in 2 days. I mean, I'm just a slow reader anyway, absorption of a book. So a lot of this is sight reading. And then you come across words, you know, like controversy or controversy.
Controversy, right. And Charles, did you write Petro, or does he just say you stopped to get the car, to get Petro? Did you write that, or did he just, I'm not saying gas.
Have with Neil, frankly, is he's been living here so long now, is he stopped saying things in an English pronunciation. I have to correct him to go back to the English.
Yeah. I remember saying that to dates, and they went, what are you talking about? You know, they don't even know what you're talking about. So anyway, I noticed you did that.
Yeah, but I'm always getting pulled up on audiobooks by, you know, director or engineer saying, you know, sorry, no, it's not pronounced like that, because it has to be for the American market if I'm here. Or obviously, you know, sometimes it's a book which is I'm doing here for both here and the UK. And, you know, then what do we say?
Well, here's something I always ask people of your stature, certainly actors, do an American. Speak in American. Just do. Oh no, we're out here. We're here with Neil Dixon, and you know, he plays a British, an expert British Secret Service agent, but he's actually from Massachusetts, aren't you?
Oh, for a muse of fire, the British pen, the brightest heaven of invention, a kingdom for a horse. I mean,
I loved
to act and monarchs to behold the swelling scene. Then should the warlike Harry. Blah blah blah. Shakespeare, you know, was basically the original Shakespearean accent was much more towards America than British. I mean, you know,
it was dirty, down and dirty stuff, right?
Down and dirty. It was West Country where they pronounce the R's.
The Brooklyn accent of Perry is very close to what the sound was. You know, because
it's
odd. Those people in Brooklyn.
It's odd you say that too, because when I remember walking around Liverpool and going, oh my God, this is like Brooklyn. I mean, this is where I grew up. It was a lower.
That's why the great John Lennon found so much
heroin
and happiness when he moved to New York. You know, it was like Liverpool for him. He didn't suit London, but he suited New York.
He didn't trust people from the South. I know our friend Michael Lindsay Hogg, who worked with the Stones and the Beatles. The Beatles were always wary of Michael because they thought he was posh and he was from the South, whereas Hagar and Michael have remained friends for 40, 50 years now. But,
where exactly are you from, Neil?
Well, I'm a bit of a mongrel, really. I mean, I was born in North London. And my accent and then as an actor, I lived all over England. When I was 13, my family moved to Nottingham in the middle of the country, which has a very different accent. And then as an actor, I went back to study in London. And then I lived all over Yorkshire, Manchester, Lancashire, you know, Scotland, wherever, the South. But people will say, you know, but your voice, well, my accent is what used to be considered not really an accent. It just was called a standard English. But that's all changed now. And, you know, because of the decentralization of London, you know, businesses and everything. So now there's much more of a, you know, a commonality of accent. And mine now, a lot of people in England would think I'm posh. Whereas to me, the royal family spoke posh and I'm just middle of the road. And also, you know, my parents spent some money on my and my brother's education and my sister's education. So we were sent to private schools. So, you know, I think probably all that played in, you know, who knows? I mean, but I'm basically a North London lad.
Okay, a North London lad. I know that the North London, mostly in London, I remember them, how different the accent was from up. They really looked down at the northern, more northern Liverpool, Leeds, that kind of.
I know. And then again, you know, that was the case. They really did. Mm-hmm. And there was a snobbery. Mm-hmm. But that's changed. And, you know, that all started to change in the 60s. I mean, when the, you know, I always think music has so much to do with it. And theater and films, you know, it changes everything in terms of that snobbery. I mean, in the 60s, you know, people like Albert Finney and Tom Courtney were from the north of England, and they became these stars, film stars, and
they weren't George Formby.
And they,
J. Arthur Rank, huh? You know, those are
ballsy guys.
Yes,
but you know, in the first season of Atwell, we have this wonderful character called Judge Joni, who's back again now, played by that great daughter of Brooklyn, Patty McCormick, and she has the bit where she first meets Neil. And she said, "You sound like James Mason."
James Mason. I've heard that. That's the only thing I know. I'm very bad at imitations, but that's it.
But Neil and James Mason worked together.
Yeah, well,
tell that story about the second day.
I was filming in Africa, dressed in a Roman toga, and starring in this kind of epic maxi series. I wouldn't call it a mini series because it was 12 hours long. So it was it's called a maxi series for NBC here in America. And we were out in the desert in Africa. And, you know, I knew that the next day I would be working with James Mason one-on-one. Mm-hmm. And I thought, oh, God, you know, traumatic night's sleep. And thinking, oh, God, you know, how can this be? Anyway, as I was in full Roman outfit walking from my trailer, or caravan, as we like to say over there, to the set, I passed by the trailer, this long thing that James Mason, I knew, was in. And as I passed by, he came out. Mm. Just happened by, you know, the luck of timing. And I thought, I've got to say something to him, you know, but we're acting together later, but I just want to say something to him. So I went over and I said, "Hello, sir." He said, "Hello." He said, "You must be Valerius."
He does sound
my character. And I said, "Yes, yes, yes." I said, "Neil Dixon." And he said, "James Mason, the Mason Dixon line." And it was, you know, that was it. It was good. He was a very lovely man. Lovely man. Didn't take any shit, though. Excuse my French.
That's okay.
He did not take any, you know, from anybody, you know. He actually... Ava Gardner was on the in the same miniseries, and she was coming out at the same time. And he delayed his coming to Africa because he wanted to know that he had, believe it or not, he wanted the presidential suite in the hotel, and he didn't want Ava Gardner to have it. And
they worked together off and on by that time for like 25 or 30 years. They were going back to MGM when they did East Side, West Side
together. But there'd been some disruption, I think. There'd been some disruption that maybe involved some other... I don't know what it was at that time, but the lesson that I learned from him, which of course tends to go out the door these days, is that he also wouldn't come until he knew there was an exercise bike in his room.
Oh,
now, we were in a pretty remote area of North Africa, but he wanted an exercise bike and the presidential suite in the hotel before he would get on a plane from Switzerland. And the money had to be in the bank.
Yes.
And it was something that we were all sitting there and thinking, James Mason's coming out, James Mason's coming out. And we kind of went, well, then we heard from one of the producers that the delay was for those reasons. And we went, wow.
The bike, the money,
and Ava Gardner. Yeah. And it was like, you went, wow. Oh my God. He really thinks, you know, that's what it all comes down to.
Well, there's a lot of stories like that, though, aren't there? In the perks and the demands and the, what do you demand, Neil?
What do I demand?
Yeah, what do you demand?
Charles obviously provides me with, a trailer. I have to make sure that it's larger than the other members of the cast, obviously. But no. The way I look at it is how lucky one is to be able, for a long time, I have been, making a living as an actor. And, it's, what a great life.
Yes.
It's taking me over the world. I mean, how lucky am I? I mean, at this point, I look at these, the young actors coming in who, I come across a lot, just starting, and they want this, they want that, they won't do this, they won't do that with, and you think, God, you'll be lucky if you're around in 20 years time, let alone 35 years time, let alone 40 years time. And so you've got to just love it. I mean, a lot of the demands are always out of insecurity, I think. I mean, agents are, demanding this and that. It's,
I remember, Wolfman always used to say this to me when I was younger, because, look what he does, look what I do. It's like, this is what I do. And we used to go and make personal appearances. We used to go all over the country here and there, open shopping malls or go wherever we go. And every time we left, he would say to me, boy, he said, at least Jesse James had a gun, How lucky are we, right?
So you hear these dulcet tones coming out of Mr. Dixon. But can you imagine if he had an American accent, which he almost did, because of Spiros Skouras? It's one of my favorite stories.
Yes, I want to. You got time to tell us about Spiros Skouras? He wrote that down. Charles had told me about it.
Well,
who was the head of 20th Century Fox?
My father was a managing director of a Greek shipping firm in London called The Losses. I don't know if that related to the ships they had, but what he did basically was, he was doing a lot of business with America and shipping, and he and my mother, I think in 1950, perhaps it was, came over to America, 48, 50, on the Queen Mary for business. They came over to New York on business. And, they were a handsome couple, and my mother was very beautiful, and she'd, a few years before, being offered a rank starlet contract with a British film company, and she turned it down, and she wasn't an actress, but she'd been spotted, and my father persuaded her it was a better life to be, with him, and wisely so. They were on the Queen Mary going over to New York, and they were having dinner at the captain's table. And the Spiros Skouras, who was head, I think, then of 20th Century Fox, was on the ship, and he was at another table. And he stopped everything for the whole dining room, those grand dining rooms of those days, and said, I'd like to propose a toast to the London Dixons. And Mrs. Stella Dixon, my mother was kind of singled out in this first class, whatever, on the Queen Mary. However, years later, when I moved out here, we were having dinner, and I said, what we should do tomorrow is take you to the Queen Mary in Long Beach. And we went down there, and she found, she was able to remember where they were on the ship, the whole layout of the ship. Wow. She said, this bar was bigger, or the bar wasn't, whatever it was. And the young guy working behind the bar there would say, oh, no, ma'am, blah, blah, blah. And she said, no. And then they got the ship's captain, who said, oh, yes, these changes happened on such and such a period and everything. But it was just a happy, happy experience. Yeah, so, he wanted to offer, Spiros Skouras, I think, wanted to offer her,
were you born?
20th century. London? No.
Oh.
No. I think I was conceived on the ship. No. I don't know. I have no idea. No, it was before I was born. But it was a famous story that they used to tell. And my dad said, she could have been, this could all have changed hands,
Wow. So you're off to do some acting? Is that it? I don't want to rush you out. I want to keep you here with Charles, but.
What I've got to do is, I'm in the middle of doing this huge audio book.
It's a book, yeah.
And it's a, I normally do these action adventure or, you know, historical romance, or Lord of the Rings type of thing, books. But this time I'm doing a straight history read about New York, Paris, and London. It's three cities. In the mid 1700s. So it's about London, the Gordon riots. It's about, you know, the independence in America.
Right.
It's about the Paris, you know, the whole,
what's it called?
It's the unholy city. It's an unholy city. And then it's three cities in blah, 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 blah.
I promise you, Frank, I'll get him back and we'll have him. Whole hour.
I'm looking forward to listening to that book as opposed to reading it.
I thought, oh God, this is going to be so easy, but it's not. In the all the chapters that go back to Paris and the Revolution. Oh,
night sessions. You have night sessions, and they just tell you when to come in, and you do it to what?
I do it in the day, but what I have to do tonight is do my research for tomorrow. I've got to read.
Oh, okay, right.
50 pages for tomorrow. Because we'll be doing more than 50 pages, but it's like I read all day and then I research all night and then I go in the next day and do that. So one has to pace oneself between doing different books. I mean,
is it hell on your shoulder?
You know that thing, you get a tremendous.
I know. Pain. People can't see this, but I'm watching you and it's like, you okay there? You got an itch or what? This
goes. But I mean, what is that, thing about the ears as well? The headphones on the ears.
Yeah.
And I'm reading glasses for it. And I get this numbed. My ears by the end of the day are just aching. All the bones around the ears. I mean, you know. Anyway, there we go.
It's tough work, but somebody's got to do it, okay?
It's a dirty job.
Exactly.
A dirty, literate job.
Well, listen, I'm going to sidle off.
Well, thank you so much, Neil. You do come back. Please come back with me.
I will.
So much more to talk about. And
it's a joy to talk to you.
And it's a joy to listen to you talk to me.
Bless
and to
heart,
talk Sean. Back. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bonsoir. There he goes.
So now you're stuck with me and Miss Vingsbo, the CFO. So that's,
Hey, Chaz, I've been stuck with way worse. You know that.
Yeah. So here I am.
Tell me about Atwill and where this whole thing, this whole Atwill character started with you. I love going back to the roots of stuff. So tell me where this came about and, what it started to mean to you to develop this character.
You know, I'm stuck for a moment on that. Mainly, you know, I adore Neil, and I just came up with the notion.
You mean you heard Neil in your head, and you said, I got to have a part for Neil? Or this guy?
Yeah, basically. Well, that's what I do with all my stuff. Everything is tailor-made for the actors who work for me. I don't write something and then go, where am I going to find these actors? I'm blessed in the last 10, 15 years, whatever it is, to have got this rep company of actors here in Los Angeles. Mm-hmm. And there's some who I also worked with in Canada who are also participating in it. Sometimes they do it on Skype, but a lot of them have come down here. And so I just wanted to create something for Neil because he's such a charisma and he's a throw. If this was the 1940s, he would have been a star at Gainsborough Pictures with James Mason and Stuart Granger.
Sure.
You know, he's that kind of a charismatic English actor. And so I created this, and it was just a one-off. I never thought it was, you know, I left it hanging. You know, the daughter was abducted and he's running down the street trying to catch up with a car. And then, you know, after we did Chicanery, Neil said, can we do more Atwill? Can we find out more? And so we did. And now suddenly this explosion, this week, I don't know who these people are. No one knows.
You know, it's
viral. I hope so.
It is so difficult to get demographics in this medium. And that's really hurt a lot of people trying to
get. I see the views.
Yeah.
I see. And it's, it's just been building every day and it hasn't stopped.
This
so
is good.
I'm thrilled to death. And as my older brother who lives in Sacramento said, you've been very kind to ladies of a certain age. I said, well, yeah, because they don't get, you know, sure. They get to be 40, let alone 50 or 60, and boom, there's right. No employment. And somebody like Patty McCormick, who I have adored right. Since she was on Mama all those years ago with Peggy Wood, and I didn't know who she was. She played Ingeborg, and I was mad for her. And obviously, I had a predilection towards Scandinavian women, which is finally, you know, that's why I hired Miss Vingsbo to be the CFO, because, you know, I needed someone who could handle money who was also Scandinavian.
Oh, yeah, here on Cotolo Chronicles, Neil Dixon. If you miss Neil Dixon, then you're going to have to go back and listen to this again. Don't forget there's any number of stations throughout the week running this again, and we're here with Charles Dennis, who is the originator of many things, and this time in his life, it's At Will at Large and his character, and Neil Dixon, who stars in it.
Let me plug.
Plug, too.
If you haven't seen it, all you have to do go on YouTube and type in At Will at Large, episode 2, because I'm determined to get 1,000 views by Saturday morning.
Well, you know, tell them to go to episode 1, then you'll go to episode 2. I mean, watch them both. Yep. That's what I was telling people before you came on here.
Thank you, Frank. Also, episode 1 is now gaining traction.
It will.
Because of episode 2. So anyhow, getting back to Neil.
Neil.
He's such a pro. He's great. And then Michael Swan, who's been a friend forever, who was on some soap for 100 years in New York. And suddenly, you know, it stopped. And I came up with this notion when we came back to season 1 about this guy, Nelson Chadwick, who's divorced and had discovered that he couldn't get a date anymore. He was 60 years old and he was lonely, and he was at the gym and he met this guy who he called the spark plug, who stuck his hand down his shorts and said, what's this, Nelson's column? And Nelson suddenly, you know, switched sides. Although Nelson, we discovered, will get back to women because it's just the way it is. What can I tell you?
Yeah, absolutely. You know what? I don't know if you know this or not, but I guess some time ago, before, right after this year began and started to move along, Michael Laskin was on the show. I had Michael on.
Yes, he told me that you called him and said, by the way, you probably won't know this because you're back east. Michael Laskin, 2 days ago, was nominated for Best Actor for my play Altman's Last Stand.
Oh.
By this thing called the Los Angeles, some theater, Raw something. And we're thrilled to death because the play is going to be going on tour soon. Mm-hmm. The people who produced it here in Los Angeles also have a touring production company, and it's going to be going to Palm Springs. We're just waiting for the final negotiation. So I'm thrilled for Michael. And Michael, of course, stars in Chicanery,
right,
which will be shown, as I said, in Riverside, California. And Neil Dixon also co-stars in that. So this is what I'm saying.
Yeah.
So many people from Chicanery are also in At Will at Large because it's my family.
Well, I brought it up because you talked about your ensemble, you know, and we were trying to sell some of his books and talking about his process of, and I was particularly interested because I think I'm a rotten actor, you know, and I've done some here and there, and he and I talked, and I'm going to have him on again because he told me, hey, we're going through the thing where he said, you know, you write something, and then I'm gonna fail. I think I am. But I mean, it was just fascinating, how he did that. And cause I could say to myself, you know, if I was still out there in LA, I'd be bringing you coffees all the time and go, God, there's gotta be something I could do in one of these movies. You know? But I'm horrible. I'm going through it with Michael, but Michael is just so good. I thank you for everybody you introduced me to coming on here, because everybody's just been fabulous. And Ross Benjamin's in, I was telling everyone at the beginning of the show, Ross is in At Will. At Will at Large.
Ross is also in Chicanery.
Right.
Ross produced and starred in my movie Hard 4.
That's right. That's where we started.
In the first... It's a short film that I did in New York. It was my first thing on camera in New York that I wrote and starred in with Ross, called Butterfield.
Mm-hmm.
I've known Ross his parents.
Since he was two.
A play that I wrote in 1990, I guess it was. It was called Going On, and his parents came to see it, and they loved it. And then Paula asked me to do the Ferenc Molnár's play, The Guardsman, with her. And so we would work together in the garden of her home. And there was a part of a merchant who was owed money or something. And she said, oh, my son Ross can read that. And Ross was like 15. I thought, what is she talking about, her son? And then this 15-year-old boy turned up, and he was brilliant. And we've been working together for over 25 years since. I just adore Ross. He's amazing.
Well, the whole family, they were so gracious to come on. And, you know, you're one of the people who...
It was great having everybody.
Yeah, and you know, you are one of the people, and they obviously went along with you and realized when, you know, when it was very difficult at one time. I was the first show, but it was very difficult getting anybody from mainstream, because in those days it was like, you're on what? You're on who? Do you do what? Yeah, even so, it didn't matter. My resume didn't matter. The fact is, nobody wanted to be involved in this medium. And so they were great. I kept thinking myself, stop. I talked to Paula that on that show. She was talking about writing a book, and I don't think she ever did. She ever get involved in writing that book? Because she'd been one of the last contract players, and that whole thing. She just has so many stories. And I said, well, I'll be on again. You know, you got to talk to me about the book. And what?
Paula Ragusa Benjamin.
Yeah.
That's why, you know, that was the in joke in Hard Four, is Ross's character was called Spencer Ragusa.
Yeah.
Because it was his mother's name before MGM changed it. And she was writing that book, and I remember sitting there in the living room one day, Richard and I, listening to Paula read to us, and it was just so moving. You know, because she'd had all these issues back in the 60s, and she was in these different institutions and stuff. And I thought, this is fabulous. I said, what are you going to do? She said, I eventually want to get it down to about 8 pages. That's when I said, okay, right, we're not going to talk about the book anymore, because where are you going to sell this thing? It's going to come in a chocolate box inside. There's 8 pages of her memoir.
It'd be on Twitter. It could be on Twitter. It'd be in 27 parts on Twitter.
Have you ever seen Ragusa chocolates, by the way?
I think I have. Yes, I have seen
it. I saw them for the first time in Zabar's.
Yeah.
And I said, now, I wonder if they're, because there's, you know, they're like the Corleones. It's a town in Italy called Ragusa.
Mm-hmm.
Well, in Italy, it's Sicily, excuse me. So,
that's right. You never say it's Italy. Sicily and Italy in the same.
Oh, this is a different place. It's called Sicily. Hey, come and sit down here. I want to talk to you about my son. Take your head off. I mean, your head off.
So in other words, she never finished the book.
Oh, I didn't say that.
No,
I bet she did. Oh. I'll bet she's got it down to a haiku.
Oh, man.
Woman. You know, Tony Perkins, who was a dear friend of mine, and that's how I met the Benjamins, through Tony.
Mm-hmm.
And I actually seen these two guys when I was a kid. I went to the opening night when I was working for the paper in Toronto.
Right.
And I'd go down to New York all the time, and I saw this play called The Star-Spangled Girl. It was a Neil Simon play.
Yeah.
And it unfortunately was the first play that Nichols didn't direct. It was George Axelrod, which was strange because George Axelrod was a playwright.
Mm.
And the play was not a huge success, but it was originally Richard Benjamin and Connie Stevens Tony Perkins and Connie Stevens. And Tony was such a gent. He told the producers, you've got to bump him up. He's got to have equal billing with us. And that was the first time I'd ever seen Richard Benjamin. And he was just astonishing. And Ross and Osgood, Tony's son, I believe they're born the same year. They're a couple months apart. And so they, you know, they grew up together. So Osgood is now a filmmaker himself. I appeared in the first film he did as a student when he was 14. But he's now made his second film, and he brought Paula out of retirement, just as I did. Paula's always retiring.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's always – I remember saying to Ross, do you think I can get your mom to be in the movie? He said, well, you can ask her. And she said, I don't think so. And then the day before shooting, she calls and said, okay, I'll do it. So that's what you have to be ready to go to the, you know, like, you know, the horse racing, you know, when is the gun going off?
We were watching a movie. My oldest son's like 23 now, and there was this movie on. I'll tell you the name of it in a second. You'll know what I'm talking about and where this fits into reference of the Benjamins. And of course today, other friends of mine or other people I knew were saying, well, there's this great series on whatever it was. I don't know where it is, HBO or what have you. There's this Westworld thing, you gotta see this. And the movie was on, right? And I said to my son, see this guy? I said, this guy was like on my show. I said, this is Richard Benjamin, this guy. And they're like, no, millennials know nothing about any of these people, you know? And they're like looking at, even though the new Westworld has, okay, it's updated or whatever the heck they do with it now. But it wasn't, you know, it wasn't that, because I said, you know, I should try to get Richard on it. Well, I wonder what he thinks about all this, because there's it's having kind of it's been playing more since the TV show.
Well, there was an article in Vanity Fair last month about it, and they did interview Richard about the original film.
How did I miss that? Really? That's in last, I have Vanity Fair. Really?
I think it's last month's Vanity Fair. There's a whole thing on Westworld.
Jeez.
And they talked to him extensively about
everybody it. See that? I beat people with a punch with ideas, and I don't care.
So, sorry.
No.
This summer, I'm hoping to go to Sweden, and maybe we can do a Cthulhu Chronicles from Sweden, and that'll be a first for you.
From Sweden? Let's see. Perhaps, you know. But yes, maybe, I'd love to do it.
Give me wings like they gave Neil Dixon. I'm not coming. I'm not leaving Sweden till I get those honorary Air Force wings.
Just so.
Oh, of course, but I wasn't in the Air Force, and he was big as. I kept wondering, what the hell were they giving him wings for?
Charles Dennis is with us. That is his real name. He has two first names, just like a lot of.
No.
That's not your real name, isn't it? Oh, that's what? Oh, no, I see what you're thinking. Two last names. I like that.
Like Nick Charles?
Yeah, two last names. We're talking about, you gotta go to YouTube, friends, and you could even subscribe, or you could subscribe to Food Dog Productions,
please,
right?
Please, I need subscribers like crazy on there.
You get this
when
thing.
If you watch the show, it says subscription. It doesn't cost any money. Just click it and be a Food Dog Productions subscriber. Cause there's some other weird offbeat things on there, like Brian Cranston reading from my novel, The Magicker, Ed Asner. Who's on, Brian and Ed are also members of the rep company.
Yes.
Ed Asner has now,
He was in Hard Four.
He's in Hard Four. He also did a reading of my play, The Alchemist of Cecil Street with Brian. Mm-hmm. No, these guys are just, they're buddies. They turn up. It's great.
That is great. I love these ensemble, friends, these people who you know are stars. And then they're always there for their friends and other stars, the stars that no one knows as well as them because of whatever reason.
Warner Brothers in the '40s, you know, you watch a picture and there's Bogart with Peter Lorre and Sidney Greenstreet and Mary Astor, you know, cause they were all under contract. So these people aren't under contract to me except emotionally and they turn up.
Those are the hardest contracts to break. This is Cthulhu Chronicles with Charles Dennis. And he's at an undisclosed location, as usual, out in Hollywood. We never tell where people are broadcasting from there. Okay, let's go back to the original question that spawned this portion of the conversation, and that was, of course, your character thinking of Neil. There's a million things you could have thought about for Neil, though. I mean, you're on that, so you're on the side like I am, you know, in terms of writing and stuff. You're that. Why that character? Is it this time of his life that seems to be the character? I mean, he could have played a billion different things. He's so versatile.
Just, you know, I love John le Carré. I love Raymond Chandler, and I just something. I don't know what my process is. I mean, I sit there. I tell people it's something I'm doing. And they go, "How do you get these ideas?" Mm-hmm. I said, "What are you talking about?" And then I realized, "Oh, they think I'm strange." Well, I am strange in my own way. I remember my first year in high school. I don't know what it was like where you grew up, but you know, did you have library class? Did you have to go to the library once a week?
Sure, I grew up in Brooklyn.
I went to the library class in Toronto, and there was a book called Scaramouche by Raphael Sabatini.
I remember the movie.
Yeah. Well, it was, yes, with Stuart Granger, sure. James Mason again. There we go. Mm-hmm. No, it wasn't James Mason.
It was, go ahead.
But with the line at the beginning, the dedication, which said, he was born with a gift of laughter and a sense that the world is mad.
Mm-hmm.
And at 14 years old, I said, I get that. Yeah, that's right. Me. That's the deal. You know, where somebody, you know, someone else would show a scene where people are going to a funeral, you know, and it's very sad. I'd have one of those pallbearers slipping the banana peel.
Yeah.
Because that's life, you know. and my ex-wife once said to me, is everything funny to you? And I said, yeah.
Yeah, I probably.
Because otherwise.
I've gotten that one.
Rest of your life crying, and who wants to do that? We're only here for a short time. Enjoy it.
I always know when I get an idea. So many things go through my head because like you, we've been exposed to so much, literature, theater, movies, you know, we've been exposed to so much that obviously how we process, things, is a matter of picking up, as everyone does. We pick up stuff from things we like and penchants we have. I'm always fascinated with where I get these things. I like to look into them. I'm not like you. So if someone says to me, that's why I asked this question. I like to know how somebody else, I always like to know how other people work because I don't think I work like a lot of people. And I look at, well, who's that? And who am I thinking of at this point? Or where did that come from? So when you did mention, you said the three people, Dashiell Hammett, who were the other two you mentioned? This is
John Le Carre.
Yeah, Le Carre.
Those, you know, smiley books.
Mm-hmm.
Raymond Chandler. And the Coen brothers, because of that quirky thing that's become popular, thank God.
Right. Because they don't brand. I mean, they have their own brand, but you and I know what we're talking about. We're talking about the guys who slip on. They just happen to become popular doing it. And so obviously those are three influences, the three things that you draw upon.
I don't call the Coen brothers influences.
No, not them. I'm talking about the other guys.
My shoulder, and they went, "Oh, this guy."
The literate.
Is. Let's do what he's doing.
I'm talking about the literal guy. I mean, Chandler and them.
Yeah. And in the upcoming episode that we're shooting shortly, there's a bit where Fury, the ex-wife of Nelson, I'm not giving anything away.
No, you know, spoilers here.
She's in bed with Atwell, and he says, we can't do this again. And she said, why? He said, because, you know, you're Nelson's wife. She goes, oh yeah. So you can't sleep with the ex-wife of your partner. She said, that's like Sam Spade meets James Bond. Then she goes, which turns me on all the more.
So you see, so I'm right. It's, look at that. Look at those things that go through your head. But Neil, I don't know why I'm so fascinated in this, but because it's that part. And as I said, it's how he plays that part and those expressions and everything about him and Atwell.
He's of that tradition that we've lost, you know. He went to drama school. He learned to speak beautifully. His diction is impeccable. And I appreciate that. I went and lived with him for 6 years. That was my finishing school, as I call it. And so I have, you know, I can, I walk, you know, I straddle a line between Americans and Brits. The Brits love me because they know I know where they're coming from. And the Americans kind of think I'm this, you know, I have one of my actors, Lauren Lester, always calls me Sir Charles. And it's like, what? You know, I never think, but I realize I am this strange hybrid now.
Well,
how many miles to the gallon I get? But
how many? Oh, Petro, in Petro. So,
indeed.
So the character, I'm really hammering on this. How much? Okay, so you have this idea and you have this total feeling and understanding of Neil as an actor and what he brings. But he puts flesh and blood on this character. You haven't written Atwell is not a character you've written in prose, so there's not a lot of detail and stuff like that. So you just have this general feeling. You connect with him, and he gives that flesh and blood, and you learn more about the character you've created. Right?
And this... Episode 3 that's coming up, you know, there's, we find more. Because Atwell was really very tortured, you know, and for an Englishman, you know, they're not supposed to, you know, give stuff away. But because he's been living here in California for years, he's a little bit more forthcoming than most, as is Neil. I mean, Neil, you know, he's fascinating to me because he's now been living here. Well, I met him in 1989, I guess, you know, and he'd been living here about a year. And his daughters, you know, basically grew up here. Mm. You know, you talk to his daughters and you go, you know, well, you know,
sure.
I mean, my parents came from Europe. They were very young. I don't know if you're first or second generation, but you know, when you got the relatives that talk like that, you know, and so it's the same thing with Neil's daughters. You know, they've got their mother and their father who speak, you know, very properly. Yeah,
right.
And
right.
They're like American chicks, you know.
And, where was I with that? I think that's pretty much it though. So he did, tell me about directing in a sense, in that kind of sense. I mean, you create these characters.
Here's the deal.
Tell me the deal.
You know, and I know people heard from the beginning, I don't shoot this with a normal camera.
Right.
I don't have a crew. I shoot this with my iPad. My new addition is this marvelous microphone that fits into the top of the iPad, so the quality of the sound this season is superb compared to what we had before. The actress, Patty McCormick, who has been making films now, God bless her, for 60 years since she was a tiny kid. And she said to me, I am more free on this shoot than anything else I've ever done because there's no intimidation by the crew.
Right.
It's just me. And of course, these people are all my friends. Occasionally, I find a new actor that's recommended to me and welcome them into the family. But it's funny, when Patty was a little girl, after she did Bad Seed, Orson Welles was trying to get a Don Quixote film made. Mm-hmm. And the wraparound was Patty McCormick sitting on Orson Welles' lap while he read her the story.
Uh-oh.
And then, and this film was never properly completed. Mm-hmm. It went on for years and years. Patty's stuff was cut. Although if you go on YouTube, you can find the footage. And it was silent because Orson was shooting in the Italian style where he would have everybody dub everything later on. But when we were shooting Chicanery, Lauren Lester, who I mentioned to you before, was in a scene with Patty and he knew that she'd been in this Don Quixote. And he asked her, he said, what was Orson Welles like? And she thought for a moment. She said, like Charles.
Oh, and that's God.
Great. Well, because he was shooting the way I do.
Right.
You know, we're just
oh, let, that
let's
way, yeah.
do we can, you know, and where we can. And, you know, it's guerrilla filmmaking, but the result is great.
And this is, I wanted to get into this anyway, because, you know, most of the people, a lot of the people, the audience are young, and they'd have no idea of how cumbersome, you know, it was with crew and film and stuff like that. So here you are using this, you know, really cutting edge, technology. But as a director who's done,
The word expensive, Frank, expensive. The number of film projects that I had collapse at the last minute because money wasn't there. And the joy of the iPad for me is I don't need any money. I just need the talent.
Well, tell some younger people who are getting into it only because, and they're getting into it with that equipment. Talk a bit about directing.
No, that's the next episode because it's 10:30. This is the end of our time. Yes.
No, 11.
Oh, Frank, no way.
Well, you could, if you gotta go, man, it's okay. I'm just saying what.
Gotta go talk to everybody. Tell them to watch YouTube for Atwill at Large, and I will come by. I promise you, the next time we talk about how to do this stuff. I'm sorry, Frank. I thought it was 10:30.
It's perfectly okay. I've done. I'm not worried about the half hour. I just enjoy having you, and I enjoyed having Neil and going through this. We'll definitely do it again. There's no doubt about that.
Okay.
All right. So go have a lot of fun. It's only what? It's 7:30 there.
Yeah.
It's only 7:30 out there. So you got plenty of time to do stuff.
Thank you, sir. And we will chat very soon.
We shall. Thank you again, Mr. Dennis. Senior Dennis.
Over and out.
Good night.
Good night.
There goes Charles Dennis. And here comes the half hour that we did not know we would have here on Cthulhu Chronicles. I don't know how people, well, I don't know. It's difficult to ask me anything any day, anytime, difficult to talk to me. Is that what I'm saying? There's so much I have to ask people of my own ilk. I don't isn't it amazing, if you're like, I don't know, like I, but I mean, we all have similar elements of personality, but for gosh sakes, there are so many things that people do differently when they're doing the same thing. And I'm not that I direct. I want to know more about directing, no less. Directing on an iPod. This is something I know. There's a lot of people in my audience want to know more about. I know my son Ray has done various stuff with the movie, the Windows movie or whatever. And I'm like, I have gotten to a point where everything is a labor for me except just writing. So I've narrowed it all down to what I do. And this is just talking, so it doesn't even matter. But when people do the things, creative things like he's done, and I have been thinking lately, I've had this thing in my head about a short, and I've been trying to develop it in as it's developing. And I'm always intimidated by the very chore of doing it. And I think I got a pretty good eye, too. I don't think I have a bad eye. What am I talking about eyes? I mean, you know, in terms of shooting something. Because, you know, directors, you know, watch movies and directors have cinematographers. They got people who deal with the lights and the angles, right? Even regardless of the crew puts together a film, you know, a thing. There's still so much involved in putting it together. So I know what he's talking about. There's no crew. There's just him. But I want to know more about it. I did a little editing stuff. And then now those of you who have seen little, the stuff that's on, speaking of YouTube, you know, if you go and see the little, crazy little stuff that Bill Bostick directed and that he and I have done on Cthulhu Chronicles from the YouTube from way back, you'll see it this seamless, I mean, well, anyway, I haven't done any of that. I have a difficult time anymore doing anything that has to do with doing something. I don't know. I have no idea what that just meant. It's just that I'm, you know, I'm getting older. Did I mention I get the senior movie price? Yes. So what I mean is there's just so much I can do, and I would love if somebody else did it because I could express myself. So I feel I could express myself with words and, you know, given an actor and somebody else who can handle a camera, whatever, I feel they'll do much better. And this new equipment has always been somewhat of a problem to me in terms of addressing it. I got to find an easier way to do it. And I'm not like a millennial who can just give them a digital something and they go, well, this is how this works. I can, you know, and I still open those outrageously folded instruction pages that come with the digital cameras or things or whatever. Ugh, it's just a mess. And I don't know. Was that
the ADD?
No, it's not that either. It's not that either. There's something deeper than that, which we're not going to go into here because obviously we are not doing a psychological interpretation of me and things or what have you. What we are doing here is on Cthulhu Chronicles. I will continue to tell you. Foo Dog Productions, Foo, FOODOG Productions, that's Charles Dennis's company that is doing this, did Chicanery, which we talked about when he that was on. And, of course, Hard Four, where we first met Mr. Look at that. I just found something that when we just met Mr. Dennis, Senor Dennis. So let me see. Let's do a couple of this stuff here and give me a time to run off to maybe we could all replenish our precious bodily fluids that we have with our liquids, our beverages. Maybe we can, yeah, right here. There's one right there. I'm doing this as we move along. Maybe we can do this, and then come back. do that, do this, and then come back. Next week, hopefully, Kurt Brando, and we still got a bunch of minutes left. So let's do this. I'm, again, it's the same thing. I'm doing as I speak. As I speak, I'm doing what the technical guy should be doing, but not doing because there is no technical guy. There's just me. Let's do this and come back. I'm gonna run off to the loo. Oh yeah, there I go again, right? I gotta run off to the loo. How about that?
The Cthulhu Chronicles, the internet talk show from the neo-postmodern world.
Public service announcement now. Notify your congressman immediately if you have a complaint about life in America. Remember, your congressman is American, and although he won't respond to your complaint, us Americans should at least know what each other is.
Early to bed, early to rise makes a man healthy, wealthy, and wise.
And all was Benjamin Franklin wise.
So you actually think electricity can pass through metal? Ha! Ben Franklin, go fly a kite.
Excellent idea. Where are my keys?
Besides the bifocals, Ben invented the Franklin
Up
stone.
You go.
The odometer.
Whoa.
Oh, and the lightning rod. Ingenuity, pass it on. From the Foundation for a Better Life at values.com.
In a world where reading is dying out, a new champion emerges. Wacky escapades. Parallel universes.
Hello, everyone. This is me, Frank Cotolo.
There's never a dull moment as Frank weaves a tale of a writer making you laugh, chuckle, and learn a bit about life. Pick up License to Scale by Frank Cotolo, now on Amazon for your Kindle.
This year, more than 172,000 people will be told they have lung cancer.
Lung cancer.
60% will wonder why.
Why?
As they never smoked or quit smoking years ago. Lung cancer will kill 163,000 people this year. More people than breast, prostate, colon, liver, and kidney cancers combined, making it by far America's number one cancer killer.
Cancer killer.
But there is hope. New treatments are available and more are on the way. The Lung Cancer Alliance is working to focus attention and research on lung cancer to develop early detection tools and more treatment options. Lung Cancer Alliance is leading the charge as the only organization solely dedicated to providing support, resources, and a voice for people touched by lung cancer and those at risk for the disease. Join us in the fight against lung cancer. The time has come. No more excuses. No more lung cancer. To learn more, visit lungcanceralliance.org or call 1-800-298-2436.
Hi, this is Paul McCartney on behalf of Rad. If you're drinking, you can't drive my car or any car. Remember, if you're partying this holiday season, don't drink and drive. Got it? It's just not worth it. Doesn't make sense. Thank you. Yes, I'm
gonna be a star. A public service message brought to you by the U.S. Department of Transportation, Rad, the National Association of Broadcasters, and the Ad Council. Beep, 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 yeah.
I've been in bed with Dee, and it was so good.
In bed. I'm in bed with myself.
I've been in bed with Dee.
Was it good for you, Dee?
Hey, it's the artist Dee. Have you ever wondered why and how I could go around flaunting the term the internet's first superstar? Well, I was here first, and I'll tell you how and why in my new book, In Bed With Myself, The Making of the Internet's First Superstar.
I've been in bed with Dee, and it was so good.
Go to theartistdee.com to order your copy today.
Some say superstar, and others just say, holy moly.
Oh, dear. Oh, oh, dear. Oh.
And he doesn't even have the book yet. It's only $14.95. There's only 100 in stock, so you better get yours now.
No. Let's... I've been continually laughing at that and getting confused with what the heck I had here. How did that happen? This, I'm unbelievable. Sometimes you just ask for something to be on and it's, here we go. I wanted to just put on some Cuban music because forget about the third man. And I welcome everybody who's still listening in Cuba, the Cthulhu. Yeah! Cthulhu Chronicles available now to people on the shores and in the cafes. Makes you want some of that Cuban coffee. How about a Cuban sandwich? You just can't get a good Cuban sandwich in America anymore. I don't know, what is it? Corned beef and mustard? Or, and you tell them, I can't. So welcome to everybody once again listening in Cuba. We were always on... We were always available, but, you know, not... Isn't that like one Cuban song that we could do? You know, I think there might be... Wait, I know this may sound really... This may really be template, but let's see if I can get this... let this one... Oh, God, we got to go here. Let's get this one thing that we all know from here in America. I think it would be this one. Would it be? I hope it's not. Here we go. Hello. Abalu. Yo quiero pedir que mi negra me quiera. Oh, yeah. Que tenga dinero y que no se muera. Ay, ay, ay. Abalu. Abalu. Everybody, go. We love it. I don't know what kind of a drum is that. He's walking around singing Desi Arnaz. Anybody? Oh, wow. What a... Welcome. Everybody listening. YouTube is amazing, isn't it? Look. Unbelievable, YouTube. He's going at it, Desi. That, what kind of a drum is that? In America, this is quintessentially Cuban. And in the 1950s, this... Whoa, look at him go, huh? Play that drum there. With his hands, there's no sticks. Look at him go. Listen to him go, after. Desi! Thank you, yeah! That was from the I Love Lucy show, which is a show where nobody wanted Desi Arnaz to be on that show. Because he was Cuban. There were no Cubans. who are doing radio, television, anything in those days. I want to remind everybody who is listening and that we are on, this is the live version of Cthulhu Chronicles, on a Thursday evening when we're on every Thursday night, this great time, Eastern 9 p.m. And if you're listening live, then you are listening to, if you stay with us, Tom Savino is coming up with Savino Veritas. And just a lot of laughs, a lot of satire. Not just laughs, I'm talking about satire. Okay? Satire. Which is editorial laughs. Something or other. Satire. Doesn't necessarily have a slant. Although, whatever. You know. Tom Savino and Savino Veritas coming up right after this. And for all you stations, again, that are not running this show, please run this show right after mine or put it on before mine. These shows available to you at juicedtalk.com. The archives are there. And Barbaloo is available on YouTube, but that's not where you go. What you want to do on YouTube is you want to get to At Will At Large. A-T-W-I-L-L, At Will At Large. And Charles Dennis's piece, which is a series, and we want to keep getting subscribed to it, listen to it, Charles get some activity, because this thing could go right, this could go to Netflix, it could keep going, and it could be, it's really good, the performance is great, story's fun and crazy, and I like to watch things I would not think of doing, okay, and I could not do something like some of the stuff that Charles has written. I'm just not there. Just not in that theatrical area, okay? I don't really need to describe either way, what have you. So I like, and a lot of things like that. I like to watch a lot of very commercial things too, and I don't do them. Even the funny stuff. It's just not where I am located in my head and in my creative juices, if they are juices, then maybe. I think right now they're slushies. My creative slush. At this point, I have no idea if they are juices. But I know one thing. My name is Frank Cotolo. I'm the man whose name adorns the title of this show. And thank you and welcome, Cuba. And Cuba, you're going to like Savino Veritas. If you're in Cuba, you're going to like that. That Savino guy. By the way, while I'm speaking to Savino guy, don't forget while you're over at Juiced Talk, you can also get the fabulous show, Artist D's fabulous show, Up and Up All Night. With D, and I think you can still get Velvet. Has Velvet still got shows there? Yes. But Tom Savino's Savino Veritas, and of course, Dead Air, which is Tom Savino and Frank Cotolo from way back in the 70s. It's a radio drama. I don't know what it is. Radio plays, radio show within a radio show, and it's funny. It's parody. It's satire again, and it's humor. And you will hear it and go, wow, that's how they used to do that? I'm going to tell you about how they used to do that. There's nothing digital about it. You will enjoy some of it. There was something in each one of those episodes. I don't know how many episodes, but a lot of them are posted up there and they're free. You download them. They're free. And they have some glitches in them because there are, this was done on tape. Does anybody know about tape? Let me see a show of hands, show of elbows, show of fingers, show of toes. And when they were done on tape, they've been digitalized. And I'm noticing that an awful lot of, where does that phrase come from? Awful lot. Because awful, an awful lot. You know, I think we shouldn't say an awful lot. We should say, there's a lot. We should say a lot. Because a lot means, is big numbers, a lot, right? Not a few, would be short numbers. I'm going to stop saying an awful lot. That's a very New York phrase. I would bet you dollars a donut, you buy the donuts, that if we looked that up somewhere, with looking up is the thing to do to find out these things, we would find awful lot. I'm noticing that many pieces of audio are being remastered, digitalized. Friend of mine sent me a link to an Amazon product. It's $149. It's Sergeant Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band, which is going to be 50 years old, they say, which means it's going into its 51st year. And there's also, it had been remastered, the son of the original producer, George Martin, his son, Giles Martin. I love the name Giles. I always like that name. Giles Martin has remastered it because he knows all the digital sound stuff. He's his father. This is what I was talking about with Charles, too. You know, that kids are growing up and they didn't know the analog world. They only know the digital world. So they're doing things digitally. And they could teach their fathers, but they don't need to know the stuff that the sound stuff, because it's completely different. It doesn't even exist anymore. But so for Tom and I to get this, someone had to take care of taking these tapes on reels. Hello, tape. It's like physical stuff, and you talk onto it, and I don't even know how that worked. The sound gets on there, and the molecules and the atoms get together, and they record what you say. I still don't know how that works. No less zeros and ones. How does this work? This is being recorded as we speak, and we speak as so it's being recorded. In any event, in all events, and certainly in this event, a lot of things are being transferred. And the great thing about that is preservation. They say they're preserving things that are decaying because the life, the shelf life of analog was, I still have tapes in this house. They're sitting in a suitcase. Early tapes of my doing things or what have you, and broadcasting and also music and stuff. And if I were to run those through a machine, if I could get a machine, I'd have to go to eBay to get a reel-to-reel record just to hear it. And I think they would crumble. I think they would crumble taking them out of the box. Not a long shelf life in terms of staying in one piece. Today, digital things are forever. When I talked about you doing a time capsule, that's what we were talking about. You use a DVD. I mean, a CD. Too many the DVDs, the pictures, even that. This stuff just goes forever. And the stuff that is being refurbished is for preservation, so it will last forever. So we're not going to lose a lot of things. And you know, if you go see CGI is now, it's life. You know, I don't know, people who do 3D animation are doing it for the art of it, because it's still an art, and it's terrific. It'd probably be lighted very differently and recorded, and I should say filmed, but it's not film anymore. You can't say, we filmed that in, because it's not. I guess just recorded. Digitally can be done different, but you still have to move. It's still cumbersome and laborious and lumbersome and laborious. Both ways, it's difficult to still do that, and it takes forever. But people who do that, they don't, not that CGI is quick, it's not, but it's a whole different way of handling it, because you use a mouse, and everybody's going to have carpal tunnel one day. And did I tell you that literally, this is only how many years? Kids who grow up with this stuff and use mice and do things are going to get carpal tunnel. But now I have it. I had an EMG. Someday I'll tell you about my EMG test. And I don't know what, I still don't know what it means. Enigmatic magnet, what is this? That's my return. Enigmatic magnetized generator. I don't know what the hell, and sticking needles in you and putting electricity into you, to find out what. Well, good things. You know, this is also digital. It's a digital test. And they find out, and they found out I do not have muscle disease or nerve disease. I didn't know there was nerve disease and muscle disease. Here's what I'm saying. I never knew much. And I know, the more I know, the more I learn, the less I know. Isn't that what you say with that thing? I still don't. I walk around with a back scratcher. What can I tell you? My name is Frank Catolo. Man's name adorns the title of the show. I told you where to buy the books. So you should go to buy the books. I told you about At Will at Large. And, so did he. Charles will be back next week. Hopefully this works out. Kurt Brando will be with us. And I'll also be prepared if something happens and Kurt can't be there. Stacey Lane Wilson. So L.A. Got to read this book. And again, as I said in the beginning, it costs nothing. Go get it. It doesn't cost nothing. It costs something, but when I say nothing, it's like saying an awful lot. I don't mean the lot is all, everything in it is awful. That's what I mean about these phrases. You know, a lot is enough to say. A lot means many. We can get along with that. Where I grew up, people had to overspeak because, and still not express themselves. Well, that's a whole nother show, hasn't it been? It has been. Oh, that's the other thing I'm going to do here and there. I'm going to plug in some classic Cthulhu Chronicles as I find ones that people have been asking. If you'd like to hear a Cthulhu Chronicles again, and you can't find it on the archives because we go back and have been broadcasting well before there were archives at Juice Talk or anywhere else. If you want to hear one, and you remember it, he did that show once on Brains or whatever, the guy, the doctor, okay, then just write to me, fcotolo@yahoo.com, or message me over there at the Facebook, where I am, Frank Cotolo. You don't have to, there's no disguising me, that's me, Frank Cotolo. And you can get me there, ask me things, what do you want to see, what do you want to hear? As I'm here, I'm in pain. This carpal tunnel thing. Nothing to do with it either. I'm just going to keep getting pain or whatever. Well, you're not a doctor. Why am I asking you? I have to know that, if you want to hear a repeat, if you want to hear a show again that you found fascinating, I can find the parts of that show. I don't have to run the whole show. It's not like doing not like we're doing the show again. Just rerunning the show is what I'm saying. That's what I'm saying. I'm saying that, I'll get you parts of it and the crux of it. And we'll, not gonna do any production though. I'm not gonna like make a copy of this and then edit. That ain't gonna happen. Okay. I'm not doing that stuff. It's too much work. I don't want to do it. I want to do more. I want to get more by doing less. That's what I want to make more and be more by doing less. Okay. I don't want to do that. So I will have the file in front of me and we'll flip through it and we'll find out exactly what to play, and we'll play it, and I'll talk, and we'll do it. And you'll hear the crux of the show you'd like to hear in that format as I do the show. I don't know what else we're going to do because that's not how we work. We don't plan these things way ahead of time. Michael Laskin will be coming back. Now that I know he's going on tour, I gotta hurry and get him. I gotta get him, right? Don't I? Because if he's going on tour, he'll be able to do the show. And Charles Dennis may be going to, Sweden. We could have him on again in Sweden. Kurt and Heather Drain, who I'd like to have on with Stacy and other things. CotoloChronicles.blogspot.com. That's me on,
That's Cotolo over there. I know. You know what I mean?
always me. That's correct. So good night, Cuba, and hello, evening. Wake up, it's night, everyone. So that's it. Thank you, Charles. Thank you, Neil. And thank you, everyone listening and who will continue to listen and go to all the various places you can go for Frank Cotolo and for everyone else and this station and the other stations. Good night, Mrs. Erstwhile, wherever you may be located. We've said a lot, but I'll let you dwell on it all. Cotolo at Large. You know what's funny? It's called At Will at Large, and my Tumblr is called Cotolo at Large. I guess, well, not that I made that up. Oh, well, I'm going. I have nothing more to say.